Coming up on today's program, roller derbies, Dunbar students, and a rough road drive. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend. As always, thanks for sharing your weekend with WISO. Coming up, that rough road we're going to travel is out in the city of Xenia when we talk to City Mayor Ethan Reynolds. Up first, the Gem City Roller Derby is on a roll, building a powerful Dayton fan base and multiple teams for two decades now. And that momentum is holding out for the local roller derby team's 20th season. The nonprofit will have had three home games at the Dayton Convention Center this year, jamming its bleachers with new and faithful fans at their first home game on June 27th. WISO's Shea Frank attended that game to learn more about the full contact sport and its history in Dayton.
Get the points! 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 So to get points, our skater has to pass the hips of the other player. So as they're coming in for their second lap, it's all about how many players' hips you pass.
That's Jessica Beans. She is a volunteer on the training committee for the Gem City Roller Derby. Beans has been playing with the team since 2020 under the name Slamwise Gamgee. She says while their teams have fluctuated in size and success, she joined when their A-team, Purple Rain, was on a winning streak.
We were ranked number 12 at the top of like how we did out of 160 teams in our region, which is all of the Northeast America. 160, we were 12. So I feel like I came in on this time where we're really coming into our own.
And the Gem City Roller Derby's audience has also grown over the years, pushing the organization to rent larger spaces like the Dayton Convention Center over their earlier local skating rink venues. A record number of fans fill the stands at this match. But the Gem City Roller Derby didn't always have three full teams and around 80 league members. Gracie Rocker has been with the team off and on for 19 seasons. She says when she first joined, they had only 7 members.
You know, so I've seen the league grow. I've seen it fall apart. I've seen it rebuild. And get 20 years in, it's pretty good.
The group is now made up of 3 heats, the A-team Purple Rain, the B-team Violet Femmes, and the C-team Lavender Haze. Those teams play other members of a larger roller derby organization based on their skill levels. That's according to Lisa Smith. She is a Gem City Roller Derby member who's currently taking a break from playing on the team.
We're a part of a larger organization called Women's Flat Track Roller Derby. And that organization has rankings in certain divisions.
The team's first home game against the Louisville Roller Derby saw both the B and C teams battle for points around a hand-taped track. Leslie Fairchilds has been with the Gem City Roller Derby for 15 years. She says the community is what brought her and her sister to the sport.
We have fun pretty much beating each other up and then go party together. And we're all friends.
Daniel Tarbert is the co-chair for sponsorship and fundraising for the Gem City Roller Derby. She says roller derby might seem like a violent sport, but it is one of the most welcoming games you can attend.
Derby is for women, femmes, and thems. Although there are men's leagues, if that's your vibe.
Audience members echoed that sentiment. Beaver Creek resident Salem Shepherd visited her first ever roller derby game because of its inclusivity and welcoming community.
More people like me are represented like on the team and in the crowd, and that makes me feel a lot more engaged with it in a way that I don't by like mainstream sports, I guess.
Kelly Karp from Yellow Springs also attended the first home game of the season, which coincided with Pride. She says she was interested in showing her daughter how sports can celebrate women's strength.
It is important for me to bring my daughter and her friend out to this because I wanted her to see women being really fierce in something that they're doing and being like athletic and just sort of seeing what women can do.
As the skaters battle for points on the track, the Gem City Roller Derby's team scheduler Megan Farriger says their success is not only a credit to their team, but the Dayton community as a whole.
There's a lot more involvement in the local Dayton community and partners, and I think that's been really exciting too. So it's as an organization, it's grown. You see a lot of leaders that are growing in the organization. I just think that's been really exciting to watch over the last decade that I've been here.
Future matches in Dayton will take place on August 29th and September 19th. Bean says they will host 2 skater clinics around September and October for people interested in joining the pack.
We're always looking for skaters, transfer skaters, people that want to learn, so people can come to that new skating clinic in the fall and then become a roller derby player.
For WYSO News, I'm Shay Frank.
Find more of Shay's reporting on our website at WYSO.org. This week on We Outside, Trey Grace introduces us to a local agricultural program where students are learning practical skills, making a positive impact in their community, and getting outside.
You gotta get it straight. There you go.
At Highview Hills Park in Dayton, students from Dunbar Urban Agriculture are out here building something, not just for a grade, but for their community. This park isn't used much. Not because it isn't beautiful, but because it hasn't been easy to move through. I joined high school students from Dunbar Urban Agriculture Program while they worked hard to enhance this natural space. First, I spoke to Nessa Moyer, who told me what they are up to out here today.
We're out here building bridges so that people can be able to access the trails and so that they can be able to have somewhere to walk at when they come to this park, because people don't usually come here because it's not as accessible. And they don't know that this park is here a lot of the time either, because I didn't know. But now maybe because it'll be more accessible and it'll be easier to walk through, maybe people will come here and be able to walk in here.
Then I talked to students Carmelo Blackford, Raquel Ortiz, and Emmanuel Musavini.
Why was it important to you to do this? I mean, especially with it being so much hard labor, like what did it mean to you to have this done?
Basically, so just anybody who wants to walk up on the trail, you know, so it can be easier for them. You know, people might have, you know, disabilities and they want to walk on it easier.
What we're trying to do is try and make this place a little better. And last time we planted, like some trees, and we were able to explore here, you know, get to know the area a little bit. It was really nice. I personally enjoy the nature. I love to see, you know, the animals, and I love to see the water, the trees, and the wind, and the weather's getting better, you know.
Yeah, I live right close by here. It's important to me because I want to be able to come here with my friends.
You get off just a little bit, and then that starts spinning out, and then you can strip this out, and then we're done. You want to make sure that everything is straight in line.
And then I spoke to another student, Alexander Joseph.
I was mostly inside, like I'm an indoorsy person, but I didn't know how to kayak anything, but this program really helped me out, just exploring, coming outside, really enjoying the flowers and the trees and the bees, you know. To see projects that we have in mind come to fruition is just beautiful.
It's been great seeing some of the young people that are, like, super excited. Even the ones that are a little hesitant about the outdoors, really getting acclimated, getting comfortable.
That's Niani Brown. She works with the City of Dayton's Office of Sustainability. And she's been out here with the students watching this whole project unfold. Niani shared that deeper connection to nature matters for the students.
Like I said last week, they were out planting trees. Like, every student planted at least one tree. They were out identifying salamanders and crawfish and morels and all of these things. And it was just so great to see how, like, interested they were, to see them, like, hanging out, to see how much they were enjoying themselves. You know, just knowing that this is contributing to their graduation, but it's also contributing to them, like, as a human being, as a person.
And that's what community and connection looks like. More than a trail that people can walk through. It's a place young people can point to and say, we built this. Their teacher, Mr. Houston, later sent me an email thanking me for amplifying voices that aren't always as valued as they should be. As someone who came up through Detroit Public Schools, I felt that. Keep up with the students on Instagram at Dunbar Urban Agriculture. For WYSO, I'm Trey Grace. And We Outside.
You can hear new episodes of We Outside every Wednesday in July and right here on WYSO Weekend. And catch up on every episode anytime at WYSO.org. We Outside is made possible with support from Five Rivers Metro Parks and is produced at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WYSO. And I'm going to step aside for just a moment and take a seat in another chair. Let's bring in a guest host.
So you're listening to WYSO Weekend. I am Caitlin Schrader. I am not your normal host, Jerry Kenny. He is actually in the interview chair, and I am interviewing him because he has a series he has been working on and is continuing to work on Tell me about, what is your WISO Mayor Series?
So the WISO Mayor Series started a couple of years ago, actually, as just a way to get out and learn about our local cities. And so we started that effort with a little outreach on social media, asking residents what were the challenges going on in their cities, what did they like about their hometowns, just give us a picture of city life and how residents were responding to living there aesthetically or otherwise. So that's how it started. And we got a lot of great responses. And we talked to a lot of cities in that first round of interviews. So we're slowly winding up the gears to generate some more interviews. We have a couple of new mayors on the scene. We're going to hear from the city of Xenia's new mayor, Ethan Reynolds, who did a great job. We had a lot of fun with his interview. We actually jumped in his car and he drove me around town to point out some of the things he had been talking about.
And, you know, I think you mentioned an important point earlier. You and I, about a year ago, we worked together to go on Reddit, on Nextdoor, on Facebook to try to ask people, what do you want to ask your mayor? What do you want to hear from your mayor? In this series, it really started with you, the audience member, listening, weighing in and setting the foundation. Why do you think it mattered to the series that we started out that way?
I think for me to just go out without getting input from residents didn't really make sense. Why not find out what the people want to know?
Yeah.
So it really came down to just that simple equation. You know, we talk about what's going on in the business community, what's going on arts and culturally, and what are the issues that are challenging both residents and city leaders. So the people who have heard the series and commented on it have said it's a great thing to help them become more aware of our neighboring communities.
So we've got Xenia Mayor coming up. Is there any other folks on the horizon?
Yeah, so we've got Dayton Mayor Shanice Turner-Sloss, who we are working on scheduling an interview with. Also, New Carlisle has a new mayor, and we're going to make the rounds again. There are some issues that cities have been facing since the first time. So It's a continuing series and something that I think brings value to WISO listeners. So we're going to keep this going.
Yeah, and I can tell you, as the digital editor here, I see really good response to this. People want to know what their local leadership is doing about their current problems. And people often are, I think, pleasantly surprised to learn about initiatives, about stuff on the horizon coming up in their community, and that we're making sure that they're aware of.
Yeah, they want a strong economy. They want jobs. They want good homes to bring their families up in, and they want a good arts and cultural district. They want to go out and have fun in their hometowns and be with their neighbors and experience life.
Let's say someone's listening and they've got a question for their mayor. And if you happen to be one of our local mayors listening, we would love to hear from you. Jerry, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think probably the best thing to do would be to email news@wyso.org. If you are a resident and you have a question about your city and your city mayor, just put in the subject line WYSO City Mayor Series. If you are a mayor of a city, a local town, you can do the very same thing. Let us know that you're interested in an interview as well and getting the word out about what's happening in your community. Challenges. I'm going to ask about challenges. What maybe is not going right? We want to hear about that as much as we want to hear what is going right and why do people want to come to your hometown.
Jerry, I think that's about all the questions I had. Anything I should have asked you about that I didn't?
No, I think we've got the bases covered. Just keep your eye out on this program and the WISO website. And you can check out past interviews on the website as well, wyso.org. Just check out the WISO City Mayor Series.
Yeah, Jerry, thank you so much. It's fun being in the interview chair for once today.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks, Caitlin. And here's what went down on my trip to Xenia. Xenia Mayor Ethan Reynolds has been on the job since January and says he loves the city he's helping to lead.
Love the people, love the community. This is my home. My whole family lives here. So this is, you know, going to be my home for the rest of my life. I jokingly call it like Cheers, right? Like where everyone knows your name.
I met Reynolds in late April at his home office a few blocks away from downtown. All around us are political memorabilia, books and posters of the political leaders he admires, and countless vintage campaign buttons and other items. I asked what led him into public service.
It has been instilled in my life from a very young age. My mom and dad always taught me, like, you help those who cannot help themselves, or you go out and you serve. So growing up, my mom and dad would make me shovel snow for our elderly neighbors for free with nothing in return, because, you know, that's what we're supposed to do. I wanted to serve my community. This is my home. A lot of great things going on, some things that we need to fix, but this is where I call home, and it's about working towards something bigger than yourself.
Speaking of things to fix, let's go over what issues drew you into the current level of service that you're at now.
One of the biggest issue by far in Xenia is our roads. It's 40 years of underinvestment in our roads. I mean, the average road spend from 08 till 2023 was like $1.4 million, and we have a $43 million road issue. And I just didn't think that was cutting it. And so in the last few years, we've spent around $5.2 million a year on roads and other infrastructure-related things, but definitely roads. I mean, this year we're spending another $2.5 million on roads. So, like, that's important. Like, the only way we're going to fix these roads is going to be two ways, really, because voters are going to tell us no on the income taxes. They've told us it multiple times, and they say you can do more with less. So the way we're going to do it is by cutting spending, which we've cut nearly $1 million out of our budget last year to earn that trust back of voters, and by new housing developments and new businesses and new opportunities, bringing new tax bases in. We've consistently seen around 4 to 7% increases in our income tax year over year because we're building more homes. I mean, we just approved another 400 new homes out, actually like a quarter mile past my house. And it's going to be great. Like, we need those people. We need new folks to move in. It's not flashy work, I mean, but it's important work.
To see some of the work Xenia is doing, Reynolds takes me on a driving tour of downtown.
So, I love our historic downtown. I just think it's so beautiful. Yeah. Courthouse, towering above it all, and all these great old buildings.
To get there, we travel over some of the roads he says need badly fixing.
So this is King Street. It's historic King Street. This is one of the old mansions I love. But as you can see, it's very rocky and bumpy. But this year, we're going to literally take this whole road, fix all the utility work underground, and pave and build a brand new road for these folks. These folks have asked for it for years and years and years. And we finally, council, we got together and we said, we have to make this strategic investment to get this road done. This is a very active road. Not only is it what you call like a thoroughfare road, people use it to cut across town all the time. So this is important. Like, we got to make sure that this is taken care of, because you hear it all the time from every resident of this street, or residents from across Xenia talk about how poor this road is. So it'll be fixed.
And if they've been asking for the repairs, they're ready for the inconvenience, which is going to take some time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's going to be a year worth just to get all the utility work done. So this road is already rough now. It's going to be severely rough this year. However, you know, next spring, they will have a brand new road. So we just ask people to bear with us. And, you know, like I said, like, the issue with roads have been 40 years in the making of underinvestment. This council has taken the necessary steps to address fixing these roads now. And that's important. Like, we're not going to be able to fix every road at once, but we're definitely investing to fix them in the future and making sure that these things get done. And
not far away, Reynolds drives me through some new developments going up.
So this is the Xenia Market District here. This is a miniature version of the Green, is what some people have called it. We're going to have townhouses, there's going to be some entertainment, there's going to be a lot of new restaurants, green space, a new hotel. Like, this is in the heart of our downtown. So this used to be all housing originally. Then the 1974 tornado came through and destroyed it all, mass devastation here, especially in this area. Then you obviously get the 1970s, you know, early 80s strip malls, which were all here, Kmart. You know, the economic collapse of 04, 05, 06 kind of time frame,
all of it left, and then it just kind of withered and died on the vine here. And now we're seeing new facelifts on these old buildings with new roofs and nice little promenade area. You see not all the green spaces coming and new trees are being planted. Like, this is going to be a beautiful thing. In the next 2 to 3 years, it'll be done. But it's going to be huge. We're going to have a ton of new restaurants. We already have a massive amount of interest here in this little promenade area where this chimney is. It's to represent an old smokestack that used to be in the Zenith skyline. And this area will have cornhole and a community space and string lights, all the modern amenities that people are looking to see. And yet, here in the heart of our downtown. So this is going to be great for everyone in the downtown, which is huge for us. It's going to take some time.
And Xenia Mayor Ethan Reynolds is getting out of the office in other ways. He's holding monthly coffee events with residents, business owners, and local nonprofits. And he's slowly working his way through residential meetings in all of Xenia's 21 neighborhoods, getting their input on the life in Xenia they want. You can find more from our City Mayor series online at WYSO.org. Coming up, WYSO's Shea Frank talks to the folks at the Ohio Newsroom, and we've got Bird Note to wrap up our program.
Today, from the Ohio Newsroom, preserving Ohio's farmland.
Support comes from Ohio CASA. Ohio CASA's mission is to ensure children experiencing abuse and neglect have a caring, trained adult in their corner. Information about CASA volunteer work is at ohiocasa.org.
Today from the Ohio Newsroom takes you around the state, connecting you with news and neighbors from all over Ohio. I'm Kendall Crawford. More than 1 million acres have gone out of agricultural production over the last 2 decades. Statewide agencies say Ohio communities need more help in preparing for growth and development as residential, industrial, and energy sectors continue to vie for land across the state. That's why the Ohio Department of Agriculture is giving more than 20 counties funds to create land use plans. Ohio Newsroom member station WYSO reporter Shea Frank joins us to explain. Hello, Shea.
Hi, Kendall.
So 1 million acres, that is a lot to lose. What's been some of the driving factors behind the decline?
Yeah, so over my time covering the ag sector, farmland use and loss has been a prominent concern for a lot of farmers, especially in Ohio. At the recent Ohio Corn and Wheat Growers Association meeting, private equity was definitely one of the factors that U.S. Representative Greg Landsman brought up. He said these different private groups are buying up the property and then leasing that land back to farmers at much higher rates, which is really just pushing those farmers out, putting them in a tough spot as the ag sector is already facing a number of challenges. I mean, we can talk about climate and market irregularities, global conflicts pushing higher fuel and input costs. It's just ongoing. But another major piece that's been a huge discussion point in the news lately has been data centers or solar development, putting a strain on farm land use across Ohio.
Okay, so we have all these different strains. What exactly is a land use plan and how could it help?
Yeah, so basically a land use plan is a long-term policy document. It helps local governments plan for the future physical development of their community. That includes like outlines for where homes, residential developments, businesses, parks, infrastructure, maybe data centers, if we're looking at that, where those things should go. And it works as a legal, kind of like a living, growing framework with zoning laws and subdivision regulations to help plan the future use of land in a certain area.
How will these local counties work with farmers to develop the plans?
Well, when I spoke with Brian Baldridge before, they were still in the process of getting these contracts with local communities set up. That was back in May. So a lot has changed, I'm sure, since then. But from the conversation I've had with Baldridge, he made it clear that these local governments receiving funds included county commissioners and, you know, local government that we would think of. But it also included those farmland preservation organizations directly. So those preservation groups are a part of the structural planning process. They're not just an afterthought or like a secondary witness bringing a lived experience to the table discussion. They're literally a piece of that backbone that will help these land use plans stand up to future challenges.
Gotcha. And these grants, they range from $25,000 to $50,000. Why did the Ohio legislature see this as a worthwhile investment for the state?
Yeah, so this is, firstly, not the first time this type of grant opportunity has arisen. I mean, when we look back in 2008, Baldridge was an Adams County commissioner, and they put a very similar structure in place to create a land use plan for his county. So he said it's personal for him. You know, firsthand, he knows how well these type of plans can work.
We have to make sure that we have a voice at the table so that we can be part of that conversation as we want to make sure one of our largest industries here in Ohio survives for the future.
When we look at food and agriculture in the state, it contributes $124 billion to the economy each year. So when we're looking at preserving farmland as part of this conversation, the ODA had to get involved. They knew it was something they wanted to get ahead of rather than falling behind and having to react after the fact.
That is Shay Frank, Food and Ag Reporter for member station WYSO. Thank you so much.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
That's all today from the Ohio Newsroom. We'll talk with you tomorrow.
This is Bird Note. Rock climbing on Eagle Cliff in New Hampshire's Franconia Notch State Park requires perfect focus on the points of contact between climber and mountain. And keeping an eye out for peregrine falcons whipping by. These granite cliffs are important for peregrines. In fact, each year, popular climbing routes in the area close temporarily to give nesting falcons their space. Historically, peregrines bred throughout New Hampshire's White Mountains, but widespread use of the pesticide DDT caused them to disappear from the state and throughout eastern North America by the 1960s. Biologists released captive-raised peregrines, hoping to reestablish the species in the wild. In 1981, Eagle Cliff hosted a successful peregrine nest, the first on a natural rock face in the eastern U.S. since the population crashed. Since then, state agencies and New Hampshire Audubon have worked with rock climbing groups to decide when to close cliffs in the summer. Rock climbing biologists and volunteers have a unique role to play. They venture up to remote falcon nests to fit metal ID bands on the legs of peregrine chicks, helping scientists track the peregrine falcon's recovery. Climbers continue to enjoy the granite cliffs of New Hampshire, and they've helped ensure they're not alone on the mountain. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana.
Bird Note, telling vivid, sound-rich stories about birds. Their mission is to inspire listeners to care about the natural world, and I think they're doing that. I'm Jerry Kenny. That's it for this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. This series is available as a podcast. You can download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Our theme music is Another Beautiful Day in Paradise, provided by Magnolia Bolthead. We'll have more highlights, conversations, and features for you next weekend. Please join us then.